Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew. I can't believe it. This is our second episode this year, and it finally feels like the year is beginning. We're into the full swing of things, and we've got an amazing week coming up.
Yeah, we definitely do. I thought it was going to be a light week, but it turns out there's a dozen or so events, so let's get started.
Meetups around town.
Awesome. First one, VanQ.
So VanQ seems to be a pretty awesome meetup. I've attended a couple of them, and don't let the name fool you. VanQ, what does that mean? Thank you very much.
Yeah, I guess so.
I get QA automation, yeah. Quality assurance, but they also have a lot of really cool topics related to continuous delivery and integration, and really testing throughout the whole process. And this one coming up, DevOps, find solutions, not more defects. Seems like something I'd really like to go to, and fortunately, it's going to be a case of right time, right place, and I think I'm going to be there.
Because it's at CodeCore.
It's at CodeCore, Monday at 6 p.m. There's a couple of other things happening on Monday as well, one of which is the Vancouver Spark meetup. Do you know much about Spark, James?
Well, the tagline here is new functions and workflow examples with Spark data frames. So I don't really know much about Spark or data frames, so I'm kind of lost at this point. Do you know anything about this?
No. I've definitely heard Spark before. I might have glazed over some documentation, but no, it's one of those technologies that's kind of in the peripheral, but I haven't actually touched it, or really do I know any use cases for it. However, it does seem like it'd be pretty cool. New functions and workflow examples, and that's over at Plenty of Fish. So if you haven't been there, you want to go out and get into the community, it might be a good chance to do so. So that's Monday at 6 p.m. at 555 West Hastings. It's on the 25th floor. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever been to Harbor Center there, I'm sure you probably have.
Yeah, there's the Tim Hortons is on the bottom and stuff like that. On the
Oh, I think that, yeah.
Yeah, on the Seymour
that's
side.
Right, that's right. So this one would be, if you're going in the main entrance right on Hastings and Seymour.
Yeah.
Then you just go, there's a front desk at the back. And some
if you're in a Spark, I'm sure you're gonna go to this. That's probably who that's targeted at, or people that are trying to look at analytics or these data frames. It says that there is a little bit of a gist here. It does say that, you know, they're going to focus on improving readability and faster processing. So if you're using Spark or you're thinking about using it, this might be a great place to go and check out what you can do to improve your setup.
And then the next morning, open coffee. So this is one you actually made it out to one. That one time,
yeah.
James?
On a rainy December morning. Yeah.
So we might have a rainy January morning to make it out to you this time, and we'll see if we make it there. I'd love to go. I definitely like coffee, but for some reason, I don't know why, I think it's called winter, that I haven't been waking up early.
Yeah. This one's actually at 8 a.m., so like Drew said, it's in the morning, and that's at Nelson the Seagull, which is a really cool coffee shop at 315 Corral Street.
Is it Wednesday or is it Tuesday as well? We have the Closure Hack Night.
Tuesday at 6.
Right. Tuesday at 6. And that's also at CodeCore. So what's up with Closure?
Yeah, okay. So Closure is a language that can compile to Java or JavaScript if you're writing in Closure Script. Is that right?
I don't know.
That sounds like it might be right. I'm not sure.
I thought it was just a...
Closure is a language, and it can compile to JavaScript or Java.
I think the best way that I would explain this would be that Closure is a dynamic general-purpose programming language combining the approachability and interactive development of a scripting language with an efficient and robust infrastructure for multi-threaded programming.
Wow.
So Closure is a compiled language, yet remains completely dynamic. Every feature supported by Closure is supported at runtime. So it provides easy access to the Java frameworks with optional type hints and type inference to ensure that calls to Java can avoid reflection.
Oh, what a candid description of Closure.
Yeah, I just kind of came up with it from the top.
Great. So that was Tuesday at 6, and also Tuesday at 6. So we got a bunch of Tuesday stuff at 6:30. There's the Functional Programmers Meetup.
Yeah, so that seems pretty cool as well. And that's in a different place. That's over at Unbounce, which is fourth floor on 401 West Georgia Street. They have a really cool space there. Have you been?
No, I haven't. So
they have
a dedicated space
just for events.
Right.
And it seems like the Functional Programmer Meetup is maybe always there. It was there last time. It's going to be there this time. I thought it was really great. I'd love to make it out to it. Not sure if I'm going to be able to this week, though. But I mean, I'm going to give it an effort. It looks like it should be fun. 6:30 to 8:30 on Tuesday.
Cool. The next one here, and this one's really interesting, is a Tech Career Network. And the topic is AWS hiring event, so Amazon Web Services hiring event.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. This is being run by Ryan St. Germain. He's the CEO of bcjobs.ca, and we have him scheduled to be on our podcast on the 30th. So this should be pretty interesting. It's a hiring event for Amazon AWS. That's from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. It says needs a location. I have a sinking suspicion that if you actually apply or if you register for the meetup and sign up, you'll get to see what that location is.
Yeah, it just says, like, needs a location, like, literally says that. So just sign up if you're interested and maybe get a ping when the location it gets updated.
Yeah. Are you planning on going out to that, James?
I don't use AWS, so it might
You don't use AWS? I think you're probably one of two people on Earth who don't.
Yeah, it seems like everyone and their brother uses AWS.
I'm really surprised. So what do you use for infrastructure?
DigitalOcean, or a lot of the time our clients bring their own hosting, so yep. I don't get to pick, which is a pain, but, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, though. All right, cool. Well, I think I might check it out as well. I'm not really looking, but...
We should mention that this one is all day, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. on Wednesday. So just make sure that, you know, you can go anytime you want throughout the day.
It's and
through
the location the thing might be kind of important as well.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so coming up after that on Wednesday as well, but this time in the evening from 6 p.m., we have the Docker Vancouver. So that's, again, over at OpenDNS on the fifth floor. If you know where the Royal Bank is on Granville and Hastings, it's just on the fifth floor up there. Great office space. And this looks really fun, really interesting. Scaling and embracing failure. Clustering Docker with Mesos at Human API. So something I've really been wanting to look into. Yeah, I'd really love to make it out to that. I'm not sure if I'm going to or if I have anything conflicting, but I'm going to try and make it out to that one.
That sounds cool. So if you're into Docker, check it out.
And then Thursday we have, this is an interesting one. I thought I'd toss it in there. I haven't seen anything like this before, but it's called the Techstarters Mentor Night, and that's over at Lighthouse. And it looks like, from the description, it said, you know, something like if you've been struggling with learning to code and want to begin coding. If you're trying to get into code and you've had some false starts, that might be a good place to go. Alternatively, maybe if you're already pretty comfortable with code and you want to mentor some people who are just getting into it, it might be an interesting place to go and check out.
Yeah, send them an email and check that out. So that's at 128 West Hastings, and that's Thursday at 6.
Right, and 128 West Hastings, that is Launch Academy.
Exactly.
Cool.
So I found this one, Founder Story, Jerome Eng. Co-founder and CEO of VentureSpot.
I saw that too, and I wasn't actually going to put it on.
Yeah, I thought it was just cool just to see, like, as someone who owns a business and works in tech, it's always nice to hear about how other people run their tech businesses. Mm-hmm. So I always like to see how these people talk about their company or where they came from. Like talking to Chris at Wealth Bar, mm-hmm. he's a developer and he's the owner. So it's right. always nice to hear about how do you do that, because it can be really difficult.
Yeah, I glazed over the description, saw non-technical, and closed the page.
yeah.
So the next day, Friday, this is, if you're wondering what to do Friday night, this is what to do. It is the Golang Van, the Gopher Gala. Now, James, you're actually just telling me earlier that you know, you're pretty interested in Go, and I think you signed up for a course on Udemy.
Yeah, I did.
And so where better to go on Friday night than Golang Van?
Yeah, I think with my Go experience, I have a little bit of experience, but with my Go experience, I'd be the person on the team being like, How do you type in, or how do you, what's this?
Me too. I've messed around a little bit with it, but haven't done much. I really want to make it out to that because I think it looks awesome, and it's a hackathon, so
yeah,
it'll be fun.
Those are always fun. Ideas. You get to meet people that are working on cool stuff, so yeah. It's awesome.
I'd like to do a command line tool written in Go and have a chance to play around with some of the libraries for option parsing or something.
Yeah, that's
it'll
cool.
Be fun. All right, so it looks like we have a great week coming up. I'll see you out there at some of the events. All right. And we're here with our special guest, Angela Bortolussi. Now, Angela, you're a pretty good friend of mine. We met at a HackerNest.
We met at HackerNest, like all the way back in April of last year.
Wow. It's already been almost a year,
almost a year,
I guess.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. So we wanted to have you on the show and ask you a little bit about your life in recruiting. So you're with Recruiting Social.
I am.
And can you tell us a little bit to start about Recruiting Social?
Yeah, definitely. So The founder, Chad McRae, he created the company back in 2012. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've been growing like crazy. So we're actually based in Vancouver and Los Angeles. And we deal with sort of hyper growth companies or startup companies, companies that are looking to kind of take their company to the next level, essentially. I primarily focus on technical recruitment, but recruiting social as a whole, we deal with all sorts of recruitment in different industries, specifically about 14 different industries.
Oh, okay, wow. So 14 different industries, and you are actually focused on
tech. I tend to focus on tech. That's kind of like my go-to. It's probably what I'm most passionate about. Mm-hmm. I have done other recruitment in the past, but right now my focus is in technical recruitment and product recruitment as well.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into recruiting and tech recruiting specifically?
Yeah, it's a funny story because when I was younger, so a little background, my mom actually owns her own HR consulting company. So I was really surrounded by recruitment growing up, and I was like, no, I'm never getting into recruitment. It's not for me. And then I went back to school and attended Thompson Rivers University. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to major in. And my mom was like, why don't you just get into recruitment? And I thought, well, maybe I'll just do my major in HR. It'll give me some options at least. So at the time, I was working for Scotiabank, and I was a financial advisor there. And then they wanted me to help out with some recruitment, just add some support to the team. So I thought, okay, why not? And so I started hiring financial advisors and small business advisors and so forth. And I started to really like it. I thought, this is something I could probably see myself doing. And I feel like I could hear my mom in the back of my, you know, neck saying, like, I told you so. Like, you would be really passionate about it. Yeah. And like I said, my mom's definitely been an advocate for everyone's career that she comes across. So I think that just kind of instills in me as well. Mm-hmm. So upon sort of that sort of new adventure, I thought, you know, I wasn't getting challenged enough. And sometimes when I say that to people and they're like, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. I think because we... at that company, it was more so post and pray. You post a job and pray someone amazing is going to come through the doors and you're going to be able to place them. But that's not always the case. And it was very robust, the interview process. I felt it was too corporate for me. Mm-hmm. And so my mom actually knew the founder of Recruiting Social, Chad McRae. And she approached him and said, you know, my daughter's kind of looking to make a career move. Would you consider talking to her? So we had a chat.
So she acted as your recruiter.
She acted as my recruiter. You know what's so funny? She's actually placed me at all of my jobs I've ever had. She got me a job at the bank. When I worked at a clothing company, she got me a job there. Mm-hmm. She is like the definitely go-to recruiter. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I talked to Chad and it was a really good fit. So I ended up leaving the bank and joining Recruiting Social. And that's sort of what steered me into technical recruitment, was the project that I first had gone on with Recruiting Social.
That's actually pretty interesting, the way that you've kind of talked about your mom and how you got into it. It sounded a lot like your mom's been not just your mom and your recruiter, but kind of your career coach as
she,
well.
She definitely has. She, like I said, she's an advocate for many people that she speaks to in terms of their career, where they want to see themselves. And I think that's what really, when I talk about sort of the recruiting lifestyle and what that's all about, we are true advocates for people's career and we want to see them as successful as they can be. So like I said, that was definitely embedded in me at a very young age.
Right. So next guest, Mrs. Bortolussi.
Right? Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. So you mentioned going to LA or the business expanding to LA.
Yeah.
Me and Drew were laughing about a comment in the Georgia Strait about Vancouver being, what was it?
Silicon Valley North.
Is that true?
No.
Not even close. I think it was just such a bit of misinformation.
Yeah.
I think maybe the idea is nice, mm-hmm. but it's definitely not the same. So, as I was mentioning, upon sort of joining Recruiting Social and getting into technical recruitment, I had the opportunity at the beginning of 2015 to go down to LA and then split my time between Vancouver and LA. And there's just such a vast majority in terms of, you know, the type of candidates that I'm dealing with, because it's on such a larger scale. And we know in the Vancouver scene, it's a very tight community. Everyone kind of knows everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think that we'll probably even get into, like, why need a recruiter in Vancouver when we're such a tight, close community.
Yeah.
Whereas in Los Angeles, you know, companies are scaling so fast and so quickly that even their corporate recruiters can't handle the load that's sort of being brought on them in terms of hiring. So that's why a company like Recruiting Social, we would go in there and support that company.
I'm guessing another thing is that both cities probably have a lot of transplants, right? Like new people that are coming to the city for the first time. That happens a lot here.
Yeah,
right?
Big time, big time. And I think in specifically my experience in California, they're more open to like H-1B visas and so forth. Vancouver, it's a little bit closed in regards to that. They really do try to look for their sort of ideal candidate in the city. Whereas because there's so much growth in LA, they have to look sort of outside the borders.
So that's kind of interesting. Why do you think that is? It seems to me that in Vancouver, you know, there's a lot of people, companies that are really proud with what we have here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's things like, you know, we might pay less, but hey, you get the rain in the winter.
Yes, you know, that rain. We really like that rain.
What do you think it is that that lets people do that?
Do you know what's funny? When I talk to Canadians about you know, opportunities in California, whether they'd like to go there, mm-hmm. a lot of them say, "Oh, I think I want to stay here."
I hear that a lot too.
I think part of it is, you know, the culture that is Vancouver and what mm-hmm. you know, what the type of like weather's like here and the dynamic, and I mean the culture difference is quite big between the two areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got great mountains and things like that. I think that's what you're selling people when you either move them here or they decide to live here more permanently. It's just the overall sort of ambiance of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. And how's that different from the ambiance of LA?
Well, LA, and I think that's it's funny when people ask that. Like when we talk about LA, they sort of pigeon-toe it in one area, but LA is massive. And it has its own little areas that you can work in, whether it be like near Echo Park or Pasadena or downtown Los Angeles or West Hollywood. They are drastically different, mm-hmm. and the type of companies that work there are drastically different as well. So I think the exposure that you get in LA, it can be quite different. Whereas, like I said, Vancouver is relatively small, and sometimes the companies, especially you know, startup companies and tech companies. Sometimes they do offer relatively the same things. Like, what can set them apart? Like, a mm-hmm. ping pong table is just not going to justify it anymore, right? But we want more than that.
Yeah, whereas, beer on tap.
Exactly. Whereas in LA, for example, they go above and beyond that. Like, they have catered lunch. They have masseuses that come on site. You have unlimited vacation policies. We haven't sort of adapted to that just yet in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So I think it just...
Not quite Silicon Valley.
Not quite yet.
I was going to ask if you could sort of adjust for population. Do you think a lot of people, like, which direction are they going in terms of going to Canada versus going to the U.S.? Do you find you're placing a lot of Canadians in the U.S. and vice versa? Or
No. It's actually more all the candidates that I place in Los Angeles are either in the surrounding areas, like the Bay, or like Chicago or Denver, areas like that. Whereas Vancouver, anyone that I'm placing in Vancouver is essentially from Vancouver.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting then.
So I wanted to kind of back up a little bit and ask about how you got in specifically to tech recruiting.
Yeah. So it's funny, when I joined Recruiting Social, the first sort of project I got put on was to hire a back-end developer. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, okay, I've come from finance and marketing. What mm-hmm. is a back-end developer? So I was a little intimidated by the role, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was approaching candidates, I really wasn't, you know, looking for what the client really needed, because I was like, what is MySQL? What is, you know, Python? What is Django? I'm like, these are words that I've never even had in my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I'm pretty much, I guess that you could say I'm definitely a workaholic, but I'm definitely one that like really wants to grasp a role and really understand the sort of fundamentals just so I can be successful as a recruiter. Mm-hmm. And so when I was working really one-on-one with a client, I think the most success that I got out of that was working with a hiring manager. The hiring manager was great, you know, really sort of illustrated the difference between different coding languages and frameworks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it just, for some reason, it just clicked. I was finally understanding what, you know, different languages and frameworks even meant. Mm-hmm. So I decided to kind of take it to the next level and take some basic coding courses. And not so much as just even how to code, but the theory behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, which frameworks go with what. And then it just kind kind of went from there. And it is a bit challenging. I think if you talk to recruiters and you talk to them about, you know, any type of hiring, even, for example, like hiring a .NET developer in Vancouver, it's very difficult. Sometimes you're coming across a very specialized skill set that, you know, maybe only 50 developers in Vancouver have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I like about it. It's the challenge, and it's kind of like that, the hunt. And then because you have to learn so much in tech, like, mm-hmm. you know, I find it sometimes a bit comical when, you know, I hear people like, well, I do tech recruitment. Well, tech can be anything. It can be system-based. It can be, you know, front-end, back-end. It can be interaction design, creative. There's just such a vast majority to learn in mm-hmm. that type of industry. And I think that's what keeps my mind going. And it's almost like the wheels going in your head. That's what mm-hmm. keeps me so invested and interested.
I think a lot of the same things that keep developers interested in our jobs as well is just having that constantly changing tech
yeah.
and that whole mindset of, you know, we're going to go out there, tackle problems, and we're going to learn, continuously learn new tools.
Definitely.
And develop them as well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's such a constant learning thing for us. And it will always be a learning curve because, as you guys probably know, there's always new tools for you guys mm-hmm. and what to use. And the same goes for us.
Cool. So I want to ask a little bit about recruiting in general. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a stigma around recruiters. You know, a lot of meetups. I started helping out and hosting the Van Ruby meetup, and we yeah. had our first one on Wednesday, and there's an explicit line there, no recruiters,
yeah.
or recruiters not welcome, and it's really because recruitment isn't the focus there,
mm-hmm.
and I ask them, and they say, you know, of course, if somebody has the title of recruiter, but they're here to actually do Ruby code or,
yeah.
or talk code, then that's a different story, as
yeah.
long as their intention isn't...
to go after and poach them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess, you know, part of it, well, you know, I can only speak to sort of the conversations that I've had with candidates. I, mm-hmm. you know, I've been fortunate. I haven't had any real bad experience with recruiters. But, you know, there is the notion that a lot of recruiters send out spam messages mm-hmm. and they're not really tailored to that individual. And I think part of the reason is especially in tech, is that just some recruiters don't know the difference between what a back-end developer does and a front-end developer does.
Mm-hmm.
So when they go after someone that they think would be a suitable fit, essentially they might not be. Mm-hmm. And I could understand why, you know, a developer would be like, well, I don't even do that particular job. Why would you approach me? It's like you're kind of wasting my time and you're wasting up my inbox, essentially, mm-hmm. with all these messages. So I think that's part of the reason, which is really unfortunate. And that's why I always sort of stress, you know, anyone sort of getting into tech recruitment, just kind of gain some knowledge and take some courses, because it really will lay a really strong foundation as a recruiter and approaching candidates in the future.
What about this? I'm sure everybody who has dev or development in their in their LinkedIn profile probably has about 15 or 20 recruiter requests to LinkedIn to connect.
Yeah, definitely to connect.
You know, in their inbox in any given week.
Yeah.
You know, but oftentimes they don't even reach out. They just, you know, want to connect. What's up with that?
A part of it
not that I've had that from you.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Why are you doing that?
And it's, you know, it's so funny. When I first got into recruitment, I actually mm-hmm. did do that. I have to be very transparent and honest. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason is that you want to get this role filled. You're going to reach out to as many people as you can. And mm-hmm. I have people that I've tried to connect with back in 2014, and now I'm connected to them now. And it's crazy that they've accepted my invitation, you know, up to this point. But part of the reason is that they're reaching out to you for a reason. There's mm-hmm. always a reason. Sometimes recruiters will reach out, and it's obviously to fill a job, or they're sometimes what happens with recruiters too is that they have a resource plan or a staffing plan, so that they know in a couple months that they're going to need some back-end developers for a project. So they also want to sort of build up their own pipeline. So sometimes they'll send out those blank invitations, but again, that's another sort of mm-hmm. you know, I guess sort of not so great thing about recruiters, is that they send out these blank invitations and there's no sort of relevance. And you'll actually, which is kind of interesting, in California, most engineers or developers or programmers have rules about mm-hmm. how they want to be approached. So if you don't follow their rules, you'll get no message back. I don't find that as much in Vancouver on LinkedIn. It's pretty much just, here's my email, contact me if it's regarding this.
I need a black S-Class Benz at exactly 23 degrees Celsius.
And comp to follow.
Yeah. Okay, are recruiters, or is a recruiter a necessary resource to have as a developer?
Definitely, yeah. They're definitely, I guess they're your kind of guide into a company. And I think sometimes, you know, engineers or developers or anyone in that sort of space always question, well, why do I need a recruiter? Mm-hmm. Well, they are still your go-to person to kind of get you through that funnel from start to finish, right? So just as we need you to do the job, you need the recruiter to get the job. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a hand-in-hand sort of process. And, you know, I think... I guess, too, in some sense with recruiters, they're kind of like your go-to person. They're your wingman throughout the whole process, or I'd hope to at least that they would be that person, right? Mm-hmm. They are your advocate both for the company and for you as well, because as much as it might be a great fit for the company, it has to be a good fit for the candidate as well, or there's not going to be longevity in that career and with that person, with that, you know, company.
To dispel some mysteries, how do recruiters get paid?
So it does vary depending on if they're a corporate recruiter or if they're an agency recruiter. It's a little bit different. At Recruiting Social, we offer two primary services, which is contingency. So upon placement, then the recruiter essentially would get paid. And then there is also on-demand recruitment that we offer. So we just go into a company and either support their in-house recruiters because they don't have enough bandwidth, or they might be a smaller company, like a startup company, that they don't have the capacity to take on a full-time recruiter, but need that bandwidth to bring in developers. So that's where we would come in.
So they're almost using recruitment to as HR?
No, because HR can be a different component in some sense, because HR would deal with benefits and things like that. They're dealing with you know, any sort of employee relation issues, things like that. A recruiter essentially, and it's a bit different even in California and in Vancouver. See, in Vancouver, most sort of agency recruiters almost take on three jobs. They're a coordinator, they're a sourcer, and they're a recruiter. They're three different jobs in itself. Whereas in LA, they're all separate. So you'd have your coordinator. So I work with a coordinator in Los Angeles, and they'll coordinate all my interviews and things like that and get them all scheduled on the calendar. And then I am a sourcer and a recruiter in Los Angeles as well. So I'll go into the market, find the person, and then get them through the entire recruitment cycle, which is kind of like a funnel. Get them through interviewing, get them on site with a company, and then help them through the offer stage.
So to get back to the paying, you mentioned contingency as one.
Yeah.
What were the other ones?
And on-demand recruitment. So that's essentially something that Recruiting Social offers. So we go into a company and a company will hire us to fill any roles that they might need, but also to kind of give their in-house corporate recruiters some bandwidth that they don't have the ability to take it on.
So as a developer, if I'm looking for a new role and I have several friends in development,
yeah,
working in different companies, and maybe I have one friend who's at a particular company in a particular role, and I want to be a part of that team.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that if I go through this friend, mm-hmm, then he or she will get a recruitment or a referral bonus.
A referral bonus
as well.
Yeah.
What's the call here? Do I go through a recruiter? Do I go through my friend, or do I just do it by myself?
Yeah, it depends too. You know, I have a client that I deal with in LA, and they have the same program. They have a referral program. Mm-hmm. They still have to go through me though. I still have to funnel them through the process. I still have to interview them. I have to get them set up with a coding exercise if it is in tech. Mm-hmm. So nonetheless, they always have to kind of go through the recruiter. The recruiter also has to ensure that they're going to be the right culture fit for the company as well. Mm-hmm. So I definitely promote, if you can get that referral, you know, then definitely it's a benefit for you guys. But at the end of the day, you still have to go through a recruiter.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the, I guess, advantages for a company? This year, actually, I'm kind of working on going through the steps of getting a startup going.
Yeah.
Who knows how that'll go. Right? But let's say it's next year around this time, and yeah, I've got some funding, and you know, I'm starting to get somewhere. Would there be a benefit for me to go with a recruiter?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's a few things when you look at taking on a recruiter. One being they have an established network. So I have this, you know, massive network of developers that you can essentially tap into. Mm-hmm. So that is part of it. You also probably don't have the bandwidth to do all the interviewing, you know, administer coding exercises if you needed to do that. Mm-hmm. Get the word out. You know, we have at Working Social, we're on all, obviously, all social media platforms. So you could basically tap into that. We essentially become almost like your in-house ambassadors of your company as well.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty good.
So I sort of came up with this question about, like, a lot of people or a lot of developers that I've talked to that have gone through recruiters blame the recruiter for, you know, doing this or doing that. But in typical service, as a service provider, I like to blame the client. So what can you say about clients and how they can improve their ability to get a job by going to a recruiter? Maybe they need to say something they never say. Maybe they need to give information they don't normally give. How can they improve their odds for themselves versus like relying completely on their recruiter?
So are we talking about more so on the client side then?
Yeah. So okay, as an individual, what can I do to improve my odds or help my recruiter out more?
Well, that's your recruiter's job. Like, you're almost like a coach, like your wingman, right? I always suggest with it's more so the clients and their ability to get through the process quick, right? For example, in California, sometimes when you go to offer stage, you have about 72-hour window until they might have other offers from other companies. So you really have to hustle. It's a little bit more extensive, the interview process in California. For example, they would talk to me as a recruiter. Then they would do a coding exercise if they are a software engineer, for example. Then they do a live coding exercise with the hiring managers. Then they're on site. Then they're on site a second time. Then they go into offer stage. It's very tedious. I don't see that as much in Vancouver. The start to finish process is a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. But that is one thing that I usually recommend is complete communication between the recruiter, the candidate, and the hiring manager or the client that we're dealing with. That's key.
I have, I guess anecdotally, I know some people who don't really like the whole technical interview and how long it takes. I actually have a personal friend who recently transitioned jobs. And one of his requirements going into the interview was, I don't want a coding challenge. I don't want a technical interview.
Yeah.
And he actually got the job.
That's awesome.
Of course, he's got pretty good skills as well.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen in California. Like, really? No. Yeah, you got to do your coding exercise. Mm. There's no way about that. Every company that I've come across in California, they'll want a coding exercise.
And why is that? Typically, when I see something like that, it sounds to me like the people evaluating might not have anything else to evaluate based on or have the actual qualifications to.
Yeah, well, the hiring manager would, because the hiring manager is either in a lead role or in a principal or software or staff engineering role. So they definitely do have the qualifications to assess whether they have the right skill or not. And that's why with some clients that I've dealt with in the past, they'll do an online coding exercise. And depending on how that goes, and even if it goes kind of 50-50, they'll still do a live coding exercise where they actually get them on the phone, have a conversation with them to show that there's actually a human being on the other side as well. So that's key. I think anyone that says, well, I'm not going to do a coding exercise, it would be like me saying as a recruiter, well, I'm not going to tell you all my specialized skills because you should just see it that's on LinkedIn. it wouldn't make sense, right? I mean, who would hire someone on that premise, right?
I guess it depends on the scenario. In the case of my friend, he's, you know, a core contributor to several open source projects and languages. And it's just generally quite time consuming. I mean, spending 6 or 7 hours on a coding challenge for multiple places while looking for a job is something that you could get paid for.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to kind of go back to that, you know, from a client's perspective, they wouldn't want to know that you are doing a bunch of coding exercises for a bunch of companies. They want to know that you are actively seeking them as your employer of choice. So I guess there's a bit of push and shove between the two parties, I guess.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, there's always that sort of give and take. Totally.
<when you're>,
So is there anything that a business can do with their recruiter to make their posts more lucrative, you know, drive more people to apply?
Yeah, I think what a trend that we're seeing right now going into 2016 is job descriptions. We know that they can be very poorly written, and really what would attract a candidate to look at that job description and be like, hey, this is going to be my ideal job. It's not always the case. It's essentially the recruiter that's selling like the values or the vision or the dream about working for that company. I think what's so important for recruiters to know is that you should be working very closely with your hiring managers, because they can really illustrate if there's any going to be any challenges or any obstacles with the role. And that prevents us as a recruiter going into the market to be like, okay, maybe I shouldn't look at, you know, this particular platform. For example, I know a lot of recruiters use LinkedIn, but you might not find your right candidate there. You might find them on Stack Overflow. You might find them on GitHub, or you might actually find them on a meetup. So it's good to work with your hiring managers to kind of come up with those strategies and those tactics to have in place so you can be successful. Because at the end of the day, as a whole, you want to be successful, right? You don't want to sit on these roles for months and months and months. It's just time wasted and money wasted as well.
So do you find that it's a business's market, so there's more developers to choose from, or do you find that it's a developer's market where there are a lot more jobs to choose from?
I would say the supply and demand in California is different in comparison to Vancouver. I would say there's tons of jobs in California right now, and there's not enough talent there, so you're kind of fighting against so many different companies. Vancouver, it's a kind of maybe the same, but not really. I think it's kind of 50-50 in Vancouver. I think there's enough jobs for enough developers here. The only struggle that I would deal with here in Vancouver, there's a lot of junior developers, and we know that a lot of companies seek out those senior developers. And unfortunately, their senior developers in those companies just don't want to spend the time, you know, mentoring a junior developer, which is really unfortunate. But that is what I'm seeing more so in Vancouver.
I see a lot of things, or one of the things that I've been kind of, I think I mentioned to James last week, that I've been kind of surprised about is just how poor the onboarding process is with a lot of places. You know, usually it'll be, here's a wiki, or here's some docs that are kind of scattered about. They're totally outdated, but spend the first day or two reading these.
Yeah.
And that's horrible. The onboarding process.
Yeah.
I think that could definitely get better and maybe alleviate some of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree. I think too, because, you know, when you kind of go through the interview process, mm-hmm. you're almost kind of stroking the ego of both the hiring manager and the candidate, right? Mm-hmm. In some sense, you know, you're telling them how great you are. You want to be a part of this team. So that component is so much of a thrill for the candidate to go through, because mm-hmm. they're like, oh my, you know, this company wants me to work for them. Mm-hmm. And then they get to this point where they're hired, and then they get to sit at their desk and they're like, now what?
Right.
So I could definitely agree with you on that for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is whether they get teamed up with more senior engineers. I think it's definitely, if you're going to, you know, preach that it's a collaborative and a team-like environment, then you better foster that type of team dynamic upon getting hired as well.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some places, and I think going with the coding interview and actually having kind of live coding happen, I've seen some places that exclusively pair their programmers.
Yeah.
And so obviously, in their case, how well you pair with others and, you know, that you're going to be a cultural fit becomes a huge quite a big deal. Have you found that in LA? Are there more places that are practicing pair programming?
Yes and no. It depends if they're a startup or not. If they are a startup, I'm finding that you're expected to wear a lot of hats. Mm-hmm. So there isn't that unfortunate, you know, that you can be teamed up with someone. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of thrown into the wolves and hopefully be successful. Mm-hmm. So they don't have that as much. And we are seeing that there are more startups in California as they continue to grow, and there's more angel investors and things like that. Bigger corporations, for example, like Google or one of my clients, OpenX, they definitely foster that. They definitely ensure that, you know, upon getting hired, you're going to have that, you know, that go-to person, right? And the recruiters are even really good about that, that work on site as well. We are their kind of go-to person in case they're running into any issues or troubles. Just come to us. It's completely open environment. It's very collaborative. Whether that person be in recruitment, engineering, or they're a data scientist, everyone really comes together. But I think that depends on the company and the sense of community that they create as well.
What about in terms of fostering career development or growth? Do you have sort of plan set up for different people? Let's say you're recruiting or career coaching someone mm-hmm. who's coming from maybe junior developer or mid-level developer. Maybe they're focusing on web development, or they're focusing on cloud engineering, or, you know, front-end development. Do you have a sort of path lined up or ideas of?
That is more so on the hiring manager, to be honest. But I have given more junior developers tips and things like that when they go through the interview process. So essentially, I would give them tips on, you know, what a headhunter would be looking at, what a hiring manager would ask in terms of behavioral questions and skill set questions. But yeah, I do leave that to the hiring manager, and they sort of illustrate this is where you could start and this is where you could essentially go in the next year.
That's pretty interesting. I would think of it more as the career coach or recruiter's role, simply because I don't think that people spend the entirety of their career in a single place or with the same hiring manager.
But again, it depends if it's a corporate recruiter or if it's an agency recruiter. Because if it's an agency recruiter, I might not be working with that client the next year. Right? So that is one thing. So then the corporate recruiter that works in-house, again, it's not essentially their job to sort of map out. They can help the hiring manager or the team lead come up with a plan for that particular candidate. But essentially then HR would be more involved in that. They focus more on the career development than the recruiters do. Because companies are so big too in California, everyone sort of has their designated area. So recruiters essentially are recruiters. They're going out finding candidates. It's interviewing, whereas HR comes up with that career development, that component.
So we've talked about a lot of tips about how to find a job. If only there was some sort of course out there that someone could go to about how to find a job in tech.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny. I actually go to a lot of the coding schools here in Vancouver and talk about that, sort of how to build a presence for yourself, essentially. And it's just so easy, the things that you can do, even on LinkedIn, that can really attract a headhunter like me. And it just even starts with the summary part of your LinkedIn profile. If you want to be contacted, you know, it's so funny. I see this so often. If you want to be contacted, people say, contact me by email, but they don't put their email. And I think that is the most comical thing. If you want to be reached out, you got to put some contact information.
Yeah, you can just give it all up. You can just give it all up in the description. Yeah. Make them work.
Well, you could, but if you essentially want to be found or get, you know, get a job, that's the best way to do it. But just building out your summary page goes a long way.
Okay, Angela, tell us a little bit more about Recruiting Social and your the company. Are you hiring? Are you growing? You're expanding?
Yeah, we are. So as a company as a whole, we are growing our Vancouver team and our Los Angeles team as well. And we are going to be dealing with some pretty exciting clients coming up. Some of the clients that we have worked closely with, one being OpenX. So OpenX is an ad tech company based in Pasadena, California. So I work quite closely with them. Another client that I've worked closely with as of recently is Security Compass. They're based in Toronto. So even though I kind of split my time between Vancouver and LA, I do other areas as well. But as a whole, pretty exciting. I can't say some of the companies that we'll be working with just yet, but stay tuned. If you want more information, I'd say go to our website, recruitingsocial.com. That way you can kind of see the jobs that we've got posted as well. We've got tons of tech jobs and product roles. And not just that, we do retail, we do sales, operations, marketing, and so forth.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. And you also attend some of the meetups, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I know. It's always funny. I always think this is the most comical thing because sometimes, you know, being a woman in tech, you know, I'm sometimes the only lady at these events. So now with this, you know, big blonde hair, I come in and I'm quite loud and they just know, oh, there's Angela, that recruiter. But it's nice because I'm not known as just that recruiter. They know that I you know, anytime I talk to any of the people that attend to these meetups, I'm always giving them career advice, you know, any tips, you know, I get them connected with other recruiters in the industry as well. So, which is nice. But yeah, I've been going to tech meetups now for the past year. I mean, you got me introduced to Codecore. I talked to Codecore. That was pretty exciting. I think just having a presence at these meetups, it really does set you apart from other recruiters in the way that you are kind of giving back to that community. And I say this a lot. You know, I ask so much from the tech community, whether it be resources, whether it be to teach me new things, whether I'm asking candidates to pack their bags and leave a job. I do ask a lot. So any way that I can give back, you know, I try to you know, support them any way that I can.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us, too, at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack, if you haven't got one already, at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.